such as Dez in a nutshell. He banks sharply to the left, circling the city as we begin to descend. People creep out onto their terraces and into the streets to watch us land. More gather outside the gates in front of the castle.
"The next biggest city," the bargainer continues, "is Barbos, then it's Lephis, then Philia and Memnos. Sister cities connected by a bridge. Orestes is the smallest, poorest."
His expression darkens. "Are they all floating cities?" I ask.
"They are."
"I want to see them. What am I saying? Surely that didn't come from my mouth. The last thing I want to do is spend more time in the other world." Dez looks down at me. "Starting with Orestes," I add breathlessly. "Seriously, Callie, you crazy bitch, stop talking." But I can't. Not when he's looking at me like that.
"Then I'll take you to them all,"
he says, his silver eyes shining like he can't get enough of my words. I might as well have hammered the last nail in my coffin myself. Just had to open your mouth. Dez soars over the front of the castle, and unlike the grand entrance we made last time, the two of us land softly on one of the palace's back terraces. He eases me to my feet before his wings disappear. "No fancy entrance this time?" I ask.
"Tonight I didn't want to share you."
His wings shimmer out of existence as he speaks. Just as his wings disappear, his simple bronze circlet materializes. Under the black t-shirt he wears, I see the lowest of the three bronze warbands appear as well. I smile at the sight of him, my crooked king, with his frayed shirt and simple crown. Right now he looks neither fey nor human. He looks like something better than either. Casually he takes my hand and leads me inside the palace. We head down a wide hallway and through a room full of swords and scepters on display. The fey we pass don't spare a glance at Dez's attire, though they themselves wear embroidered dresses and tunics and suits with fancy buttons and beadwork. What his subjects do stare at is me. Me and my hand clasped in the king's. When I catch them looking, they bow low, murmuring, "Your Majesty," to us as we pass. I'm antsy to remove my hand, if only to stop them from staring. Dez, meanwhile, is unfazed by any of it. He leads me outside the palace, down a suspended arched walkway that connects two of the castle's spires, and I have a moment to take in the sweeping architecture of this place. The palace sits at the highest point of Somnia, the rest of the buildings dropping away on all sides. From here, the world looks to be made up of thousands and thousands of stars, each one brighter than the last. Beneath us, levels and levels of white stone houses dot the land, some even trailing down chasms cut into the city. It gives a whole new meaning to the fey term under the mountain. Once again, I'm struck by how magical, how impossible this place is. The city of dreams and small deaths looks like something from a dream, something I'm sure I'll wake from. The two of us enter another tower, leaving the night sky once more. Dez steers us down several more hallways until eventually we stop in front of a hammered bronze door, the top of it curved like a Moroccan archway, and he ushers me inside. As soon as I step in, I realize where we are. The king's quarters. I should have known from the door alone we were heading here, but I mistakenly assumed the bargainer was taking me straight to see the sleeping women. A plush sitting room spreads out before me, and beyond it a large balcony. Off to the left, I catch a glimpse of bedroom furniture. To the right is something like a dining area. Bronze lamps are mounted along the walls, those same starbursts of light I saw last visit floating inside each glass case. When I turn to look at Dez, the shadows have curled closer around him. Behind his shoulders, his folded wings shift restlessly, like they can't get comfortable. They've been out ever since we landed. The hunger in his eyes. He catches one of my hands and kisses my knuckles.
"Truth or dare?"
he whispers. He's had carnal thoughts on his mind ever since that handy little wake-up call I gave him this morning. And so have I. "Dare." His nostrils flare. One breath, he's across from me, and in the next I'm wrapped up in his arms, his lips hot on mine. He carries me through his chambers to his bedroom, kissing me all the while. Lamps dangle from the high ceiling, a small starburst of light glowing in each. On the far side of the room, a line of windows with that distinctive Moroccan arch surround a set of double doors that lead out to the balcony. The bargainer lays me on a huge bed with a hammered bronze headboard, his eyes gleaming in the light. He doesn't follow me onto the mattress, choosing instead to stand at the foot of the bed and to gaze at me. He drops to his knees, a hand caressing my leg, some of his white blonde hair sliding over his face. No, I want to see his expression. I push myself up and reach forward, brushing his hair away from his face. He leans into the touch. Both hands wrap around my legs.
Once the repayment begins, the magic takes on a life of its own, Callie. Do you still want my dare?
Judging by where we are, how Dez is touching me, and the heat in his eyes, I know this is going to be something physical. I should say no. I should protect myself from further emotional entanglements with this man. But after last night and this morning, I've decided to try a new tactic. One where I'm brave with my heart. Yes. Triumph flares in his eyes. He pushes my chest back down. Already I can feel the magic coiling around us, waiting, waiting. Unlike most other times when I feel it bearing down on me, now the bargainer's power feels warm, pleasant, like it's just there to add to the experience. Hands returning to my calves, he pulls me to the edge of the bed, my legs hanging off the mattress, the chiffon dress I donned this morning now hiking up nearly around my waist. Up Dez's hands slide, over my knees and along my inner thighs. I gasp when his fingers brush against the lacy panties I'm wearing. Dez's breath hitches as he draws my dress up higher, getting a good look at my lingerie.
"How I have imagined,"
he murmurs, his eyes roving over me.
"And it has never done you justice."
He imagined this? Hooking his fingers around the lace edges, he drags my panties off, uncovering me inch by inch. Under my mounting desire, I'm scared. Fate's too cruel to ever give you more than a taste of what you want. I'm afraid this is my taste.
"Cherub,"
Dez says, tossing my panties aside. He stares at my core, mesmerized.
"I'm going to make you feel good. So, so good."
Pushing my dress up even higher, his lips begin to kiss the skin just below my belly. "Dez!" My heart's going to hammer out of my chest. I lick my lips, my throat dry. Dez runs a finger over my core. I gasp out in surprise, my skin beginning to brighten. He does it again, and now my hips move. A low sound comes from Dez. A finger dips into me, and my mind goes utterly blank. He slips in another finger, and I let out a low moan.
"That's it, Kelly."
"Dez, I need more, far more." He removes his fingers, and while I'm watching, he licks them one by one. That is so filthy, and Lord help me, I'm aroused by it. He lets out a groan.
"Better than my imagination."
He hitches up one of my legs over his shoulder, then the other, opening me to him. It's all so very indecent. The bargainer's eyes move from my core to my eyes.
"Fair warning, I'm not stopping until you come."
And then he leans in. At the first touch of his mouth, I suck in air. It's going to be too much, I can already tell. He licks around my inner lips, throwing in a nip here and there, teasing me. Soon I'm making sounds I'm not proud of. I don't know what to do with my hands, so I twist them in the sheets.
"My cherub, so sweet, so responsive,"
he says between kisses, his voice rough. Jesus, this man wasn't lying when he said he was the overlord, or king, whatever, of sex. Has oral ever felt so good? That's a rhetorical question. Answer's no. And he hasn't even made it to my clit yet. He toys with me, and I don't fucking care because the bargainer is between my legs and he's not going to stop until I come. And then he does stop toying with me, and suddenly he means business. His tongue moves over my clit again and again. Oh, God. Too much. Far too much. My hips move of their own accord, my body glowing brighter than those sparklers hanging throughout the room. I can't take this. I try to crawl backwards, away from his mouth, panting.
Cherub, he says, drawing me back. You're not going anywhere. Not until I'm finished with you.
He won't release me. He won't release me, and I'm bucking against him. I let out a strangled sob. Tez, please. There's way too much sensation down there, and it's building. Building, building, building.
Come for me.
He's now just sucking on my clit. Impossible to think through this. Dez! My body is just a bundle of nerves, all of them taut. I can't get away, and I can't stand much more of this. I'm right on the edge, and with each stroke of his tongue,
come,
I begin to fall. Oh, my God, Dez! The sirens entered my voice. I stare blankly at the beautiful ceiling, my vision going unfocused as my orgasm lashes through me, lasting longer and burning brighter than any others I've ever had. By the time I come down, the bargainer is kissing my inner thighs, his touch still proprietary. My legs slip off of his shoulders and he catches them, closing them gently and pulling my dress down. He gathers me in his arms and moves us to the head of his bed. I stare at him with astonishment. That was incredible, mind-blowing, unbelievable.
A long time in coming,
he finishes for me. Dez strokes my hair back, his eyes filled with such longing. My heart squeezes at the sight of it. Leaning in, he kisses me, and I taste myself on his lips. It's vulgar and arousing, and my dimming skin brightens all over again. His fingers trail across my arm. I stare up at him, trying like an idiot not to think about the fact that Dez just went down on me. This beautiful man who'd always been so out of reach took a bead just so that he could give me an orgasm. The world is utterly backwards, and I never want it to right itself. What are you thinking about? I ask.
So much, Cherub.
I finger the bronze warbands that circle his upper arm.
I've imagined you in my bed 1,000 times,
he continues, his gaze on me. This moment is surreal to me. 1,000 times? I don't know what to do with the woozy, lightheaded sensation that rolls through me. It's somewhere between elation and flattery, and hope so sharp it hurts. Once again, I'm scared. Of him, of us, of everything I ever wanted within my grasp, only for it to slip through my fingers. Because it will slip through my fingers. That's just the nature of things. He presses his lips close to my ear.
Do you want to know a truth of mine?
Always, I say, turning my head to better face him. He takes my hand and presses it against his chest. Beneath my palm, I feel his heartbeat racing. My eyes move from his chest to his face.
It does that whenever I'm around you,
he says. I stand out on his balcony, looking out at the night sky. Once I regained the use of all my limbs, I explored Dez's rooms, ending up out here. I stare out at all those pale buildings and gardens that spread out from the castle. The bargainer reigns over all of this and more. Dez steps out onto the balcony. Most of the time I forget that you're a king, I say.
I'm glad,
he says, coming in behind me. He braces his arms on the railing, caging me in.
I don't want you to think of me as a king. I want you to think of me as a man.
I understand that. Labels can be dangerous, dangerous things, even when they're seemingly desirable. I want to know about this side of you, I say. I want to know how he came into power, how many years he'd been ruling. I want to know whether he made decisions by himself or if he had a committee of trusted advisors. I want to know all the boring, inane things that went along with his position because I simply want to know more about him. He presses a kiss to my shoulder.
One day, Cherub, I'll tell you,
he says. I turn towards Dez, staring down at the skin he just kissed. I catch sight of the intricate tattoos running along Dez's left arm and begin to trace them. Beneath my fingers, I feel him shiver. Where did you get these? I ask.
That is also a story for another time.
Dez and his secrets. Always his secrets. I sigh, returning my attention to his kingdom. The two of us stand together like that for a long time, not talking.
Want to know a secret? The bargainer asks.
This must be a consolation prize. I'm not to know about who Desmond the King is or about the ink that stains his arm, but he will give me a secret. Forget that it might not have anything to do with anything.
Yes, I breathe. I'm pathetic enough to take what I can get.
He wraps an arm around my midsection, pressing my back flush against his chest.
The Kingdom of Night is the strongest kingdom in the other world. Tell that to Fae of any other realm, and they'll argue with you. But it's true.
He points over my shoulder to the sky above.
Tell me, what do you see out there?
I follow his finger, looking up at the night sky. It glitters with thousands and thousands of stars, each one so much brighter than any I've ever seen on Earth. Stars, I say.
That is all you see?
He asks. Other than the night, yes.
The night,
he repeats, his thumb stroking the skin of my stomach through the fabric of my dress.
That is precisely why people take my kingdom for granted. No one sees the darkness, and yet it's everywhere. We are surrounded by an entire universe of it. It came before us. It will live on long after us. Even the stars might form and then die, but the darkness will always be there. That also happens to be why the Night Kingdom is considered the most romantic of realms. Not only do lovers meet under the cloak of darkness, darkness is the most eternal of all things. To declare your love until the end of night is the most sacred and undying of vows.
More quietly, he adds,
it's the oath I will take when I bind myself to my queen.
Knife wound to the gut. I don't want to hear about Desmond's future queen, not on the wings of what we've done together. It's not like he's making the proposal to me, after all. I'm embarrassed that I even care. I shouldn't, but it's like I can't help but open myself up to him. Lucky girl, I say, pushing away from the wall and him along with it. I feel Des's eyes on me as I cross through his room.
No,
he corrects.
She won't be the lucky one. I'll be.
Chapter 19, April, 7 years ago. This can't last. I lay in the bargainer's arms, my eyes drifting closed as he strokes my hair. I fight sleep, not wanting to lose a moment of this. Ever since I woke from that nightmare, my window in pieces and Des inside my room, he stayed with me each night until I've fallen asleep, perhaps even longer. His body feels like it was made for me, every dip and groove of it fitting against mine like puzzle pieces. But it's more than just the way I fit against him. It's the way he smells, a scent there is no name for, and the way his arm curls around my back. Right in the base of my stomach, there's a sense of rightness being in his arms, like this is the only place I truly belong. Does he feel it too? Or am I simply making fairy tales out of smoke and shadows? These are questions I come back to often. My eyelids lower, and I fight to keep them open, my gaze moving to the bargainer's ear. I reach out and trace the pointed edge of it. Fae ears. Beneath my touch, Des shudders. You hide these, I say. I swear that most of the time they look blunted, human.
Sometimes,
he agrees. Gently, he removes my hand. It's quiet. The lights around the room have long since gone off. Even in the darkness, I can sense Des's shadows blanketing me, and they make me feel safe. Before him, I had so many reasons to fear the night. Now I anticipate it, because it brings me him. Thank you, I murmur.
For what, cherub?
He says. Everything. He stops stroking my hair for a moment. When he begins again, I swear I feel his thumb brush across my temple, the lightest of caresses. I begin to drift off to sleep, so I'm not sure whether I imagined the final words he breathed into the night.
For you, no less.
Present. After our conversation, the two of us get back to business, namely, seeing the sleeping warriors. If the bargainer notices that I'm being distant, he doesn't say anything. What is there to say? That he's sorry? In this, he's not at fault. Love isn't something you can fake. And while Dez has been affectionate with me, kind to me, and physical with me, he hasn't mentioned anything about love. I'm the one that can't smother these feelings that have been festering inside me for years. The bargainer takes me down flight after flight of stairs, deep down into the bowels of his castle, until we arrive at a balcony that must be located on one of the lowest levels of the palace. Beyond it, the land drops away and the buildings are terraced one on top of the other, all the way down into the darkness. We approach the edge of the railing, brisk night air whipping my hair. I lean over it. Where to now? Dez's arms wrap roughly around my waist. What? I barely have time to stare at the bands of muscle that grip me and his intricate sleeve of tattoos before he leaps into the air, his claw-tipped wings unfurling. I yelp as my body jerks up with him. I should have known as soon as I saw the balcony that we were flying somewhere. Only Dez has stopped flapping his wings. That's about the moment I realize that we're not flying up. We're diving. Nothing can describe the sheer terror of falling into an abyss head first. The wind thrashes my hair about my face and steals away my breath as we plummet. A dizzying number of balconies and gardens blow by us, terraced along the inner rock walls of this strange island. The whole thing looks like a dollhouse. I see cross-sections of homes and shops, temples and gardens, and as we dive, each level gets dimmer and dimmer. We continue down until the buildings are cloaked in darkness. Down here it feels less like the city of night and more like a void. Our descent slows, and the bargainer's great wings unfurl above me as he angles us towards an unassuming balcony almost at the bottom of the chasm. The buildings around us are less adorned than the ones above, and the thorn-covered vines that snake around the railings and column-lined porticos appear almost sinister. As soon as we land, my body sways in his arms from the rush of blood. His grip on me tightens when I try to pull away.
"Give yourself a moment, Callie,"
he says, his voice low. I do, not entirely minding his embrace. Once Dez senses that I've stopped swaying, he releases me. I glance around what must be one of the lowest levels of the city. It's cold here, colder than the open air above. What is this place?
Welcome to the capital's industrial district, where Somnia's exports leaves and its imports arrive.
So people don't live here, per se. That's a relief. Compared to the rest of the city, this area is kind of a bummer. I mean, it's beautiful in a creepy way, but it isn't a place I would want to linger. I glance towards the simple wooden door that leads inside from our balcony. Unease stirs low in my belly. I can't detect magic the same way a fae might, yet even I don't want to walk through that door, though I'm sure that's precisely what we're going to do. Not a moment later, my suspicions are proven correct when Dez steers me towards the door.
This used to be a storage facility,
he explains,
just like the rest of the buildings in this area. It was converted to a temporary shelter for the sleeping when we ran out of space.
Ahead of us, the door creaks open, and the two of us step into a cavernous, windowless warehouse. The bargainer nods to a guard on the far side of the room who appears to be keeping vigil. Without a word, the guard exits a far door, giving us privacy. I glance around. Like many of the rooms in the palace, someone's used magic to depict the night sky on the ceiling. Tiny starbursts of light shine softly from sconces set into the wall, but they do very little to ease away the darkness that gathers in this room. That's all I notice of the warehouse itself, because all of those coffins. There are hundreds of them, maybe thousands, rows and rows of glass caskets. My eyes sweep over them. So many, I breathe. Next to me, the bargainer frowns.
Almost twice this number of women are still missing from my kingdom alone.
I suck in a breath of air. Practically a city's worth. Albeit a small city, but still. Such staggering numbers.
Inside each casket, I catch glimpses of the women, their hands folded over their chests. So eerie. Each one had a child with her? I ask. The bargainer nods, running a thumb over his lower lip. Those lips that were all over me not an hour ago. He catches my eye, and whatever look I wear, it causes his nostrils to flare. I have to rip my gaze away. I don't really want to have a moment with this man while we stand inside what's essentially a morgue. Where are all the children? I ask. There were no more than 24 in the royal nursery.
They're living with their remaining family.
I raise my eyebrows. Hundreds of those odd children are now living in Fey households? Have there been any complaints? I ask. Des nods.
But more than that, there's been a steep increase in infanticide in the last few years.
Takes me a second to actually connect the dots. I suck in a breath. They kill the kids? He sees my horrified expression.
Are you really so surprised, Cherub? Even on Earth, we have a reputation for being ruthless.
Of course I'm surprised. Children are children are children. No matter how disconcerting they are, you don't just kill them.
Before you judge my people, you should know that there have been cases of caregivers falling into the same sleep as these women. And in plenty of these cases of infanticide, these children aren't the victims, they're the perpetrators.
The thought of it all makes me queasy. I don't envy Des his job as king. I can't imagine any of this. Have any of the servants working in the nursery fallen into this same sleep? I ask, looking out across the room.
A couple,
he admits, casting a glance back over the coffins.
The Fey ones. Humans seem to be somewhat immune, so now they're the only ones that have direct contact with the children inside the palace.
Des jerks his chin towards the caskets.
Go ahead, Cherub,
he says, changing the subject.
Have a look at them.
I drag my gaze back over the room. Just the sight of all those women lying so still has the hair on my forearms rising. Warily, I leave Dez's side, my footsteps echoing inside the cavernous room. I walk towards the closest row of coffins, almost afraid to peer down into them. The glass glints under the low lighting, making the caskets shimmer in the near darkness. I step up next to one of the caskets and force myself to look down at the woman. She has raven dark hair and a heart-shaped face. A sweet face. One that you wouldn't imagine would be on the body of a warrior. Her pointed ears peek between her locks of hair. I swallow, staring down at her. Last time I saw a body this still, it was my stepfather's. Blood on my hands, blood in my hair. Never be free. I force my gaze away from her face. She wears a black tunic and fitted breeches that are tucked into suede boots. Her hands are folded across her chest, resting on the pommel of a sword that lies down her torso. She's so still, so serene, and yet a part of me expects her to open her eyes and use that sword to break free of the coffin. The vision is so realistic that I force myself to move on to another before I chicken out and leave prematurely. This one has hair that looks like spun silver, and it's bluntly cropped just past her chin. Despite her silver hair, she looks young, her smooth skin taut over her high cheekbones and square jaw. This woman is all soldier. Even at rest, I can tell her personality is all hard edges. But not even that saved her. Clutched beneath her hands is a bow, and next to her feet is a quiver filled with arrows. Another warrior. But not just a warrior. This one has a silver band on her upper arm. A medaled warrior. I begin to wind my way through the coffins. All the women wear the same black attire and each carry a weapon. Warriors who are now victims. The whole thing is putting me on edge. Some of the strongest women in Dez's kingdom lie inside these coffins. How did this happen to so many who were so capable? And if this monster could do this to these women, what could he do to an average person? What could he do to me? I begin to hum to alleviate my growing anxiety. I touch a casket here and there, noticing that the glass feels warm. My skin prickles. This situation is unnatural, wrong at its most basic level. Without thinking, my humming shifts to singing. Wake from your slumber, rise from your sleep. Tell me your secrets, they're mine to keep. The siren in me likes to string together rhymes, much the same way a witch does spells. I'm sure it has something to do with how effective my glamour is, but to my ears it's simply pleasing. Open your eyes, breathe in the fresh air. Tell me your secrets, they're ours to share. I throw a glance over my shoulder at Dez. Arms folded, feet planted apart, and wings out, he looks like he's channeling something between rock star and fallen angel. The leather pants and the sleeve of tats don't help. His eyes move over the coffins, almost as if he expects someone to move. I follow his gaze, instantly tense, but nope. The women are as still as they were when I walked in. Turning my body back towards the rows of women, I resume my song. Rouse from your rest, shake off this dark spell. Open your mouth, you have secrets to tell. I knew before walking in here that my glamour couldn't rouse these women. They were all fairies. And yet I still hold out an inkling of hope that I can help them. A minute goes by, then another. I wait for any sign of life, but no one moves. And now I feel silly, singing to a room full of fae that haven't stirred since they were brought here. I begin walking back to the bargainer, my footsteps echoing. A tinkling laugh rises from behind me. I pause, glancing over my shoulder. There's no one there. At least, no one walking or talking. I begin to move again, my muscles now tense. I'm spooked and imagining things. Slave. I pause mid-step, my eyes going wide as they meet Dez's. He puts a finger to his lips. A split second later, he evaporates into smoke. Shit, where'd he go? A spectral breath tickles my cheek, laughing softly, and I realize right about now that I might have bigger problems. I twist around. Sure, I will find someone standing next to me, but no one's there. Another laugh rises from the depths of the room, followed by a hum. The voice comes from nowhere and everywhere. It's all around me, multiplying on itself. Sleep, fair one, are you afraid? This is a game in which you are far outplayed. I glance around for the singer, but I already know this is some sort of magic beyond my comprehension. A phantom hand strokes my hair. You ask us to wake when we want you to sleep. Secrets are meant for one soul to keep. So sing your songs and rhyme your rhymes. He's coming for you. These are dark times. The singing dies away until the room is quiet once more. Holy fuck, I breathe. Time to get the hell out of this place. I eye the coffins as I pass row after row of them, expecting any second for these women to attack me. Just had to stir up trouble, didn't you, Callie? Ahead of me, the shadows swirl together, coalescing into a winged man. Dez. The bargainer's wings are spread threateningly, and his face is unreadable, which means Dez the killer has come out to play. Someone's losing their shit. Oh, so nice of you to join me, I say, my voice high. I'm about to lose my shit, too.
I never left you, he says.
I'm not going to think about that comment. This situation is weird enough as it is. He stares out at the coffins.
If I were any crueler, I would burn this room down, women and all.
Normally, a statement like that would shock me, but right now, when I can still feel those phantom fingers trailing down my skin, I'm thinking that leaving these women here, in the core of Dez's capital, is a very bad idea. Chapter 20, April, 7 years ago. My dorm room has become a collage of me and Dez. A string of prayer flags hang across my ceiling, courtesy of a trip to Tibet. The lantern perched on my shelf is from Morocco. The painted gourd on my desk is from Peru, and the striped blanket at the foot of my bed is from Nairobi. The man's taken me around the world, mostly on business trips, but sometimes just for the hell of it. I think he likes seeing my excitement. And out of all these trips, I've collected a room full of souvenirs. Pinned to my walls, between my trinkets, are the bargainer's sketches.
A couple of them are of me, but once I noticed I was a recurring theme in his art, I asked him if he could draw me pictures of the other world. Originally, my intent had been to minimize portraits of me, but once he began drawing images of his world, I was ensnared by them. Now my walls are covered with sketches of cities built on giant trees and dance halls nestled beneath mountains, monsters both terrifying and strange, and beings so beautiful they beckoned me closer.
Callie,
Dez says, pulling me back to the present. He sprawled across my bed, the edge of his shirt hitched up just enough to give me a glimpse of his abs.
Hmm?
I say, twisting my computer chair back and forth. He hesitates.
If I asked you something right this instant, would you answer me honestly?
Up until now, our conversation had been light-hearted, humorous, so I think of nothing when I say, "Of course." Dez pauses, then says,
"What really happened that night?"
I freeze, my chair coming to a stop. He doesn't need to elaborate just which night he's speaking of. We both know it's the night he met me, the night I killed a man. I'm shaking my head.
"You need to talk about it,"
he says, tucking his hands behind his head.
"Are you suddenly a shrink now?"
There's a lot more venom in my voice than I intended. I can't go back to that night. Dez reaches for my hand and holds it tightly in his own. The same trick that I've used dozens of times on him, he now turns on me. Touch. I stare down at our joined hands, and damn, but his warm grip makes me feel safe.
Cherub, I'm not going to judge you.
I drag my gaze up to his. I'm about to beg him to not push me any further. My demons batter against the walls of their cages. He's asking me to unleash them, and I don't know if I can. But when I meet his eyes, which stare at me with so much patience and affection, I say something else entirely. He came at me like he always did when he drank too much. I swallow. Shit, I'm really doing this. And I'm not ready, but I am. And my mind makes no sense right now, but my heart is speaking through my mouth, and I'm not sure my mind has anything to do with it. I've carried this particular secret with me for years. I'm ready to unburden myself. My eyes move back to our joined hands, and I take a strange sort of strength from his presence. That evening was a long time in coming. It began several years before then. Long before my siren ever had a chance to defend me. To know the story, I have to go back to the beginning. Dez had only asked me to explain a single night, but that's impossible without knowing all the hundreds of nights that preceded it. My stepfather raped me for years. I drag myself back to that dark place, and I do one of the hardest things I've ever done. I tell him all the gory details, because there really is no such thing as dipping a toe into this discussion. I talk about the way I used to stare at my closed door, that I came close to wetting my bed watching that knob turn, how I can still smell the bite of his cologne and the sour spirits on his breath, that I used to cry and sometimes beg, that despite my best efforts it never changed anything, that eventually I became complacent, and that's perhaps the detail that hurts the most. Will the fear and disgust ever go away? Will the shame? Intellectually, I know what he did to me wasn't my fault, but emotionally, I've never been able to believe it. And God, have I tried! My knuckles are white from how tightly I grip his hand. In this moment, he's my anchor, and I'm afraid when I let him go, he'll drift away from me. I'm a dirty, tarnished thing, and if he couldn't see that before, now he will. That night, the night he died, I couldn't take it anymore. It was him or me in the end, and to be honest, I didn't really care which. Killing him wasn't premeditated. He came at me in the kitchen, and he set the bottle on the counter. When I got the chance, I grabbed it and held it out like a weapon.
"What are you gonna do with that? Hit your father with it?"
I smashed it against the wall. My eyes go distant, remembering that encounter. He laughed at me. A mean laugh, one that promised pain, lots of it. And then he lunged at me. I didn't think. I swung the broken bottle at him. It felt good to fight back. It felt like madness, and I gave myself over to it. I must have nicked an artery. My body's shaking, and the bargainer squeezes my hand tighter. He bled out so fast, I whisper. And the look in my stepfather's eyes when he realized he was going to die. Mostly shock, but also a healthy dose of betrayal. Like after all he'd done to hurt me, he assumed I'd never hurt him back. I swallow thickly, blinking back the memories. The rest you know. I expect a million terrible reactions, but not the one the bargainer gives me. He releases my hand only to wrap his arms around me and pull me out of the computer chair and into his embrace. And I'm so, so thankful he's touching me, holding me, giving me this physical comfort right now when I thought I was incapable of being cherished. I crawl the rest of the way onto the tiny twin bed we now share, and as the moon sets, I cry in his arms. I let myself be weak because this may be the only time I'll ever get this. A weight lifts from my chest. The pain is still there, but the dam's been broken, and all that pressure that existed within me now rushes out. Finally, I understand why the bargainer is so alluring to me. He's seen Callie the victim, Callie the killer, Callie the broken girl who can barely keep her life together. He's seen all this, and yet he's still here, stroking my hair and murmuring softly to me.
It's all right, Cherub. He's gone. You're safe.
I fall asleep like that, locked in the strong arms of Desmond Flynn, one of the scariest, most dangerous men in the supernatural world. And he's right. In his arms, I feel absolutely safe. Present. Back in Dez's otherworld chambers, I pace, my skirt floating behind me.
He's coming for you.
The thief of souls. Dez warned me it would get worse. I just hadn't really understood. Have those sleeping women ever done that before? I ask, glancing over at Dez. The Fae King watches me from a side chair, his fingers steepled over his mouth.
No.
He doesn't even try to dodge the question like he's usually so fond of doing. And you heard everything they said?
You mean their little rhymes?
He says.
Yes, I did.
He's been uncharacteristically somber since we left the Chamber of Sleeping Warriors. His wings only disappeared a few minutes ago, but I know better than to assume he's unaffected by what we heard. He's just better at hiding his meltdown than I am.
First the children and now this,
he says, his seat groaning as he leans forward in it.
Apparently this enemy has taken a liking to you.
A flash of anger in those silver eyes. My panic rises all over again. The bargainer stands, his presence almost menacing as the darkness curls around him. His hammered crown and war cuffs only serve to make him look more intimidating. He comes up close to me, placing a finger under my chin.
Tell me, Cherub,
he says, tilting my chin up, forcing me to meet those silver eyes of his which look almost feral.
Do you know what I do to enemies that threaten what's mine?
Is he referring to me? I can't tell, nor can I tell where he's going with this. He leans in close to my ear.
I kill them.
He pulls away to meet my gaze.
It's neither quick nor clean.
His words send shivers up my arms.
Sometimes I feed my enemies to creatures I need favors from,
he says.
Sometimes I let the royal assassins practice their skills on them. Sometimes I let my enemies think they've escaped my clutches, only to recapture them and make them suffer. And how they suffer. The darkness cloaks many, many deeds.
It scares me when Dez gets like this, when his otherworldly cruelty surfaces. Why are you telling me this? I say softly. He stares into my eyes.
I am the scariest thing out here. And if anything tries to touch you, they will reckon with me.
The next few days, Dez spends in the other world doing his kingly duties while I stay back at his Catalina home. He's invited me along, but, I'm good on this side of the ley line for now. Meanwhile, I've read over some of Dez's case notes, which largely restate what he's already told me. It mentions the human servants with their bruises and haunted eyes, the fairies who fall into that deep sleep after caring for those strange children, and the people who chose death over answering Dez's questions. The whole mystery is one sad, disturbing trail of destruction. When I'm not reading up on the case, I'm either exploring the island of Catalina or Dez's house. Right now, I'm up to the latter. I wander into the bargainer's room, flicking on the lights. My eyes move from the art hanging on the walls to the metal model of the solar system to the wet bar. I've been curious as to why Dez didn't want me to see this room when he first gave me a tour of the house. There's nothing much in here. I move over to his dresser, opening the drawers one after the other. Inside each are piles of folded shirts and pants. The mighty king of the night stores his clothes just like the rest of us. I close the last drawer and move farther into the room, not seeing much else I can rummage through. Seriously, this is one of the most Spartan rooms I've come across, and I do my fair share of snooping in my line of work. My eyes land on one of his bedside tables. The only thing resting on it, besides a bedside lamp, is a leather-bound portfolio. I remember from our time together that Dez loved to sketch. I even got him a sketchbook at one point. I move over to the book, my hand curving over the soft cover. But then I hesitate. This is private. It's essentially Dez's journal. But he's never been unwilling to share his artwork before. Making a decision, I open the portfolio. I stop breathing the moment I see the first picture. It's of me. The portrait is quite simple, just a simple basic of my head, neck, and shoulders. I run my finger down the penciled slope of my cheek, noticing how bright my eyes look in the drawing, how hopeful I appear. I remember Dez drawing this in my dorm room over 7 years ago. I also remember seeing the image and completely not connecting with it. I'd been so lonely then, so full of my own demons. I couldn't imagine that anyone looked at me and saw this beautiful girl. But I'd been flattered, nonetheless. After all this time, he kept it. I feel more of my defenses crumbling. The wall I built around my heart is in shambles, and apparently Dez doesn't have to be here to destroy it. The next sketch is of me sitting on the floor, my back against my dorm room bed, giving a petulant look to the artist drawing me. Scrawled beneath the picture is a note. Callie wants me to stop drawing her. This is how she looks when I tell her no. I grin a little as I read that. Mighty words, but Dez had at least partially caved into my request. He drew me all sorts of landscapes and otherworldly creatures in addition to the portraits of me he was so fond of. The next drawing is one I've never seen, and unlike the other sketches, this one's more painstakingly executed. At first, all I can make sense of is the odd angle of the drawing, like the artist was on his back, looking down the length of his body. Then I make out the woman curled up against the chest we're looking down at. I recognize my dark hair, the top of my nose and the contours of my face, which is somewhat buried against Dez's chest. This could have been one of many nights where I fell asleep curled against him, but something about the image, something about it makes me think it was one of the bad nights, the nights where Dez stuck around to scare off my nightmares. I can feel an echo of that old pain even now. Those evenings were what made me realize I loved the bargainer. That it wasn't just infatuation, but something I could feel on my skin and in my bones. Something that couldn't be extinguished. I didn't fall for Dez because he was handsome, or because he knew my secrets, but because he stuck around when I was least lovable. Because he was a man who didn't try to take anything from me, even when I lay next to him, but instead gave me peace and comfort. Because each one of those nights he saved me all over again, even if it was from myself. And if this picture was anything to go by, it was a moment Dez wanted to remember as well. I flip to the next image, this one in color. Most of the drawing is set in deep shades of blue and green. In it I'm smiling, a ring of fireflies resting on the crown of my head. I remember this night, too. A knock on the door jolts me from my thoughts. What am I doing? I definitely shouldn't be looking through these. Even if I am clearly the bargainer's muse. Hastily, I close the portfolio, arranging it how I found it. I throw several glances back at it as I cross the room. He kept those old drawings all this time. Again, I'm reminded of his confession about how he felt leaving me. Like my soul was ripped in two. And once again, I feel hope so sharp it's almost painful. That, too, is whisked away when someone pounds on the door again. Who would visit Dez here? I get my answer a few seconds later when I peer through the door's peephole. Shit, I mutter under my breath.
I heard that, Callie.
The familiar, gravelly voice says. The bargainer doesn't get visitors here. I do. Chapter 21. May, 7 years ago.
Holy fuck,
Dez says, materializing in my dorm room.
It's a war zone out in your hallway.
In the hallway, I hear a muffled shout as some girl loses her shit because her nail polish smudged and, oh my god, there's no time to fix it! I close my laptop and swivel around in my chair. I glance down at my bracelet. I hadn't called the bargainer tonight, nor had I the day before and many nights before that. Somewhere along the way, Dez started inviting himself over. Dez crosses my room and peers out my window. Far below us, girls in gowns and boys in tuxedos cross the lawn.
What's going on tonight?
May Day Ball. Dez glances over at me, his eyebrows raised.
Why aren't you getting ready?
I'm not going, I say. I pull my legs up onto my chair.
You're not going?
He sounds surprised. Isn't it already obvious? I'm wearing boxer shorts and a worn t-shirt. I suck in my lower lip and shake my head. No one's asked me.
Since when do you wait for permission?
He asks.
And also, how is that possible?
How is what possible? I ask, staring down at my knees. I'm grumpy. Officially grumpy. If I still went to my former high school, I wouldn't have to hear the excited squeals of girls as they got ready, and they wouldn't notice how my door was ominously shut.
That no one's asked you.
I shrug. I thought it was your job to understand people's motives. When I look up, Dez's arms are folded across his chest, and I have his full attention. What? I say, suddenly self-conscious at all the attention.
Do you want to go to the May Day Ball?
He asks. Oh, God, I'm not admitting this to him. I tuck a strand of hair behind my ear. I don't see how that matters. He cocks his head, and sweet baby angels, he's going to read me. He's already reading me.
It does matter. Now do you?
I open my mouth, and I know that everything is in my eyes. That I don't fit in, and people don't entirely like me. That I'm an outsider, and I want in. I always want in, but I don't get to walk inside that particular door. I'm forever banished to watch other people live their lives while I wait for mine to begin or end. It really could go either way. My existence so far has mostly consisted of me holding my breath, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Dez is moving, closing the remaining space between us, and I'm just staring at him like a fool, my knees pressed close to my chest. He kneels in front of me, the air shimmering beyond his shoulders. He takes my hand, his eyes serious. My heart's in my throat, and I can't swallow it back down. I feel bare in the most exquisite way, and I'm not sure why that is. He begins to smile.
Would you, Calypso Lilis, take me to the May Day Ball?
Present. Eli, the most wanted list. That's all I can think about as I step outside Dez's home and face my ex. Our last confrontation feels like a million years ago. Honestly, after everything that's happened in the other world, this just seems so insignificant by comparison.
Were you trying to get caught, or did you just not give two shits about it?
Eli asks. I didn't give two shits about it. I fold my arms over my chest and lean against the entryway wall. Now I feel the heat of my anger coming back. This bastard. I can't believe you had the audacity to come into my home and threaten my life, and then, as if that weren't enough, you put my name on the goddamn wanted list.
Kelly, I never would have hurt you, he says, his voice soft.
He looks almost wounded. And I'm sure it is wounding on some level, considering he is the protector of his pack. You came into my house during the Sacred Seven, I say. Of course you could have hurt me. He shakes his head.
Your pack, or at least you were.
I feel my hackles rising at his reaction. Do you put all pack members on the wanted list? I ask. Let's just see how big Eli's balls are. Eli runs a hand down his face.
What I did, all of it, was a mistake, he says, his voice defeated. I was angry and my wolf was demanding justice.
He sighs.
It's no excuse, but I regret it if it makes any difference.
I press my lips together. It's not like I handled things well either, but putting someone on the supernatural wanted list far outweighs any wrongdoing on my part. I'm not going to let you arrest me, I say. He lets out a breath.
I'm not taking you in. I just needed to talk to you.
You could have just called.
I'm sorry, he says, his voice genuine.
Coming from an alpha like him, an apology is a rare thing. I work my jaw. I'm still so peeved at the whole thing. Pushing down my frustration, I nod, looking away. I'm not sure whether I'm acknowledging Eli's apology or accepting it. All I know is that I want to bury the hatchet between us. The shifter's eyes move to the bargainer's house.
My offer still stands, Callie.
I glance at him.
What I did was wrong, but what this guy's doing, that's worse. He's taking away your free will,
he says.
The bargainer is a wanted man. Just give me the word and I'll go in there and take care of the issue.
It takes several seconds to register what he's saying. When it does, horror washes over me. No, I don't want that.
Callie.
The alpha is in his voice. Don't, I warn. He no longer has the right to exert his pull over me. There's so much you don't know.
Then tell me, he says, or else I'm just going to keep assuming the worst.
Isn't that exactly what I've been demanding of Dez? To stop keeping secrets? And here I am being a hypocrite. But this secret... I never told you about my past. I rub my face. Even now I hesitate to tell Eli. It hurts to remember, and then there's the shame. Always the shame. But perhaps if I tell him, he'll understand why I acted the way I have. And perhaps it will help him feel better about me, about Dez, and about the situation. When I was a minor, I begin, my stepfather, Eli goes still. He sexually abused me. I force the words out. I hear a low growl. This is what I've always loved about shifters, about Eli. No one fucks with their young. No one. I blow out a shaky breath. It went on for years, and it only stopped. I pause again, pinching my forehead. I can do this. When I was almost 16, he came at me and I fought him off with a broken bottle, nicked an artery. All that blood. He was dead in a matter of minutes. Eli's growl is growing louder and louder. I stare at my hands. I killed a man. I wasn't even an adult. I thought my life was over before it had begun, all because I finally fought off the person abusing me. My voice drops. He was such a powerful seer. Had I done things the legal way, I don't know if it would have ended well for me. I take a deep breath. So I called on a man infamous for his deals. That's all I managed to get in before Eli pulls me into a hug, holding me close.
I'm so sorry, Callie. So fucking sorry.
I shudder a little as the memory runs its course through me and I nod against him.
You should have told me this, all of this,
he admonishes me quietly. I'm bad at sharing, I admit. He holds me for close to a minute, and I appreciate the comfort. Eventually, I step out of his arms, wiping away a tear that's managed to sneak out from the corner of one of my eyes. What you have to understand, I say, is that the bargainer saved me. He cleaned up the mess, enrolled me in Peel Academy, hid my crime. Telling Eli this is a gamble. The shifter is one of the good guys. He could drag me away, dig up that old case, and let the system do its work. I'm sort of banking on the fact that Eli's sense of justice, pack justice, will align with my actions. People who do bad things to innocent shifters just sort of disappear. The bargainer didn't charge me then, I continue. I know you think he did, but he has his own code of ethics. Because I was a minor at the time, he wouldn't allow me to do business with him like that. Now, knowing what I did about fairies, true favors were kind of a big deal. The fae lived to take advantage of a situation. Eli seems to understand this, too. The werewolf raises his eyebrows. It was only later that I called him again. And again and again, I came up with all sorts of favors just so that he could stick around for a while. Because I was intrigued by him, because I was infatuated by him, because I wanted a friend who wasn't scared off by my darkness, and Dez wasn't.
He should have never made those deals with you,
Eli growls. I play with my bracelet, rolling the beads round and round my wrist. No, he probably shouldn't have, I agree.
But we've all given into our baser natures a time or two, haven't we?
I say.
Eli grunts, looking out over the bargainer's property.
He rubs his face.
I wish you would have told me all these things long ago.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda. It does no use getting upset about it now.
Did I ever have a chance?
Eli asks. I glance over at the shifter. I don't know, but I do know that you deserve someone who can give you far more than I can. Stepping in close, Eli rests his palm against the side of my face.
That son of a bitch is a lucky man.
The words are barely out of his mouth when behind us the front doors slam open. I turn just in time to see Dez striding out from his home, his wings visible. His stormy eyes flick to Eli, who's still standing close to me, and I see a flash of possessiveness in them. Reflexively, I step away from the shifter. It's broad daylight out here, which isn't exactly Dez's favorite time of day. He was supposed to be in the other world for several more hours. Clearly, something changed. Did he think I was in distress? How would he even know that? The ground shivers with Dez's power, his gaze intent on Eli as he stalks towards him. I step in front of the bargainer, placing a hand on his chest to stop him from whatever he's thinking of doing. He glances down at my hand, his nostrils flaring before his eyes move back to Eli.
You have 2 seconds to get off my property before I make you,
he says to the shifter, his voice smooth as liquor. Eli stares at Dez's wings for a long moment, looking stunned. Finally, he tears his gaze away.
I didn't know, he says.
I look between the two men. Know what? The bargainer watches Eli for several seconds. Then, ever so slightly, he inclines his head.
Now you do. Callie told me what you did for her when she was a kid,
Eli says.
Thank you for helping her,
he continues.
No more bad blood between us, okay? I didn't realize the situation. Any of it.
Again, Dez inclines his head. Eli backs away, casting a glance in my direction.
Take care of yourself, Callie,
he says, raising a hand goodbye, and then he turns and walks off the property and out of my life. My brow is still furrowed long after Eli leaves. Nothing about what just happened makes a terrible amount of sense. I was expecting a confrontation of some sort between the two men, but instead I get apologies and understanding. I should be relieved, but as Dez leads me back inside, my eyes drift to his wings. That's what Eli was staring at with such shock. The Fey King's wings. The same wings Dez studiously hid from me in the past. There's something I'm missing, and I'm going to figure out what it is. Before Dez and I can talk about any of what just happened, I mumble some excuse about needing to go to the bathroom and slip away to my room. Locking the door behind me? Not that it would stop the bargainer. I grab my phone and dial Temper, pacing back and forth across the room.
Hey, bitch, what's up?
She answers. Temper, you know a fair bit about fairies, don't you? I say, jumping right in. Before we became private investigators, when Temperance Darling was just another misfit at Peel Academy, she had a minor obsession with fairies. When I originally met her, she'd wanted to be a diplomat stationed in the other world.
Fair bit might be taking it too far, but I know a few things. Why? What do you need to know?
Eli confronted me and...
He found you?
Temper interrupts, her voice incredulous.
Already? Wow, girl, you suck at hiding.
And how do you think he found me? Could it be because he tapped your phone? I say.
There's a pause over the other end of the line.
Well, shit, she says.
That is just messed up.
It's fine. We talked through our issues, now we're good. Another pause. Temper has a habit of those around me.
Are you telling me you managed to talk your way off the most wanted list?
When she said it like that...
Shit, you did! Bitch, you must have a vagina of gold. I chew on a thumbnail. Outside my room, I can hear the bargainer moving around, impatient. I'm going to have to go out there and talk with him soon. He and I both have questions that need answering. Listen, Temper, I need to talk to you about something important. Immediately, her tone changes. What is it? What do you know about fairy wings?
They're sparkly. At least some of them.